So this text, let me rewind a little bit here. We're going to consider the words of Dogen that he wrote in The Sound of the Stream, Form of the Mountain, or Valley Sounds, Mountain Colors. So as I had just said, before I forgot to turn this on, written in 1240, in a place just outside of Kyoto proper called Fukakusa. And it's the place where Kate and I used to live when we lived in the Kyoto area. Beautiful place on the side of a, I guess in Japan they would say a mountain, but I think we'd say it's a, you know, a hill, side of a large hill, or a small mountain, depending if you're born on the East Coast. Or here where the real mountains are, Western Canada. It's one of his earliest texts. Actually, I think one of the ones that we can really kind of approach pretty easily. So, in The Sound of the Stream, Form of the Mountain, Dogen wrote, "As each is able to slough off the husk, we are not restrained by our previous views and understandings. And matters unclear for vast kalpas suddenly appear before us. In the presence of such a time, what arises is, I do not know, I do not recognize, nothing I expect, even the eye of the Buddha looks at without seeing. How could human thinking fathom it?" Getting rid of the husk. You know, when I read Dogen's writings and other Buddhist texts, I'm often struck by how often they describe the spiritual life as not one of gaining something, but of losing, of letting go, of emptying out. Such a contrast with our culture's basic message of acquisition, right? Acquisition will lead to happiness. And we need our words, our walls, our doors, and our locks for protection. Protection of me, protection of the self. And what Dogen is really asking us here, or perhaps telling us, flies in the face of kind of contemporary common sense. He's saying, slough off the protective husk of our views and understandings, how we see the world. Let go. Let go of those. And when we do, when we really expose ourselves fully, he writes, matters unclear for vast kalpas suddenly appear before us. Kalpa refers to an almost unimaginable length of time in the Buddhist literature. Things that we have been so unsure about for so long suddenly become very clear, very obvious to us. And what are these? These are matters of the heart. These are matters of the soul. Or maybe we could say it is the deeper intimacy that we so seldom acknowledge, or we so seldom see clearly. And Dogen goes on to note that at such a moment, when this deep intimacy arises and becomes clear to us, there is no witness. There's no one, there's no I kind of present there watching, seeing it happening. There's no I who watches, and not even a Buddha, he says, sees and then is able to describe this. That moment. That moment. At such a moment is beyond our human intellect to fathom it. I think we all have some moments like this when everything just comes together. The sounds, maybe the colors, the forms, the touch, the sensations. Everything comes together and it's just what? Just belonging, maybe? In the busyness of our daily life, I think we fall under a spell or a kind of entrancement of separation. That there's me, and then there's, you know, everything else. And this is a kind of a common view and understanding. This is what Dogen says, this drops off, this drops away. Or to put it another way, from this kind of self-centered perspective that we kind of have most of the time, we figure that what's inside is who we are. This is Michael. And what is outside is the rest of you guys. Right, the rest of the world. Isn't that kind of the way we feel most of the time? There's me and there's everything else. And so naturally, I think with that kind of attitude, what results is we take care of ourselves and not so much the outside anymore. It's not quite as important as what's in here. This is number one. And along with this view, of course, arises the feeling, the story, that we are alone. How much of our life is spent kind of wandering through, looking for a way out of this pervasive, or at least this constantly returning sense of isolation. I'm alone. And we look for it in so many ways, right? You know, of course, new relationships. This one doesn't seem to work out. You know, try another one. Oh, this one's really sweet. Especially at the beginning. Isn't that really true? Yeah, beginning relationship. Oh, Mr. Wonderful. Right. Miss Perfect. I suppose, you know, we each have our own version of why we are fundamentally alone. Perhaps a story that somehow we are unworthy. We have learned that perhaps from childhood we're not worthy of intimacy. Or there's some kind of personality flaw, perhaps, that we have, right? I'm broken, and so far I can't have intimacy. Or maybe everyone else is broken, and that's why it doesn't work. But there's perhaps some quality lacking or some quest that we must take before we'll truly and finally enter a deep and lasting intimacy with something that's larger than me. And it's true, you know, most of the time we do, or I think most of us have at least sometimes, when we do have a kind of a deep connection, when we are embraced and when we embrace love. And yet how easily we're distracted and how easily we turn away from that connection into a kind of familiar sense of duality, of you and me, this and that. Often I notice in myself all it takes is my feeling that someone has said something cruel or unjust, and suddenly it's you, me. A word, something as simple as a word, turns us away. But I think that's partly because our modern culture emphasizes separation and continuously nurtures the concept of boundaries. This is mine. Get your hands off. That's yours. I remember my mother in exasperation once because my brothers and I would never drink out of the same glass. Never. Unless it was Coke. But isn't the dominant myth of our society that we should be a winner? We should be the successful one, to kind of stand out somehow from everyone else. And this is supported by, you know, lots of myths about how we should do this. You know, you should become wealthy. You should become wealthy. You should wear, of course, the right clothes. You should be famous. You should have some degree of fame. And it goes on from there to the trivial. You know, you should eat the right food. You should exercise to create the right body. You should buy the right toothpaste, the right cell phone, all kinds of other gadgets. Then you'll be happy. So in this way, I think our modern world, the whole world, becomes one of boundaries, of discrimination, of what we have and don't have, what makes me, me, are the things. There's a boundary between me and you, between self and other. And this is the source of suffering. So, how do we slough off the husk of common views and understandings and wake up from our entrancement? In the text, The Sound of Stream and Form of Mountains, Dogen gives us an example. Very famous example, maybe some of you have heard of it before. I'll read from the text again. In the land of the great Song lived Suxer, the layman Dongpo, who was styled Jizhan. That's just another name. He must have been a real dragon in the ocean of the brush, who studied dragons and elephants in the ocean of the Buddha. A real dragon in the ocean of the brush means he was a great writer and studied the dragons and elephants in the ocean of the Buddha means he practiced with teachers and other practitioners in the Buddhist way. So this is again talking about Dongpo. He swam and sported in deep pools. He climbed and dived through the layered clouds. In other words, he was a great practitioner, just like we're doing, right? Once, when he had gone to Mount Lu, he awakened to the way upon hearing the sound of the evening current of a valley stream. Composing a verse, he presented it to the Chong master, Chongzong. And this is his verse. The sound of the stream is his long, broad tongue, the mountain form, his immaculate body. This evening's 84,000 verses, how will I tell them tomorrow? Su Dongpo really was a very famous Chinese poet in the Song Dynasty. So that's about 1000 to 11 something, you know, the Song Dynasty. And he was a very well-respected government official, very talented man. And he was also a lay practitioner of Zen, or of Chan, the Chinese Buddhism. And there are many stories about him, some quite funny, some very serious. But he did leave a very large collection of poems, and he's one of the most famous poets of this period in Chinese history. So one night, when he was visiting a Chan monastery, he sat the night in Zazen, listening to a nearby stream. And perhaps it was a warm night. And he sat outside, and he also saw the outline of the mountains against the night sky. And during the night, or perhaps throughout the night, Dongpo hears the Dharma of the stream, sees the Dharma of the mountains, and that moment shedding the husk of his common views and understandings, matters unclear for Vaskalpas suddenly appear, matters beyond the fathom of thinking. Now, some Zen texts say that Dongpo disappeared. He disappeared. and there's only the sound of the valley streams, the outline of the mountains. But Dogen expresses it this way. Dogen says, body and mind drop away. Buddha nature becomes apparent. Or maybe we could say, intimacy with all things suddenly arises. I think, though, Dongpo expressed it really well in his poem. Because he just left it as a question. How will I tell him tomorrow? How will I tell him tomorrow? Just occurred to me, you know, after retreat, when you go back home and you see your friends or family, they say, oh, how was it? How will you tell him tomorrow? In the sound of the stream form of the mountains, Dogen wrote this after the poem. He wrote, the tongue of the Buddha does not cease. The colors are beyond coming and going. The intimacy or the intimate nature of things that Dongpo experienced that night is always present. The chanting of the 84,000 verses, the Dharma, the chanting of the Dharma, never ceases. But in our busy world, we're usually deaf. We're usually deaf to the unending call of intimacy with the world. And we seldom join in that chanting. Mary Oliver, the American poet, at the end of her very well-known poem, Wild Geese, also calls us to wake up. The end of her poem goes like this. Meanwhile, the wild geese, high in the clear blue air, are heading home again. Whoever you are, no matter how lonely, the world offers itself to your imagination, calls to you like the wild geese, harsh and exciting, over and over again, announcing your place in the family of things. Here too, in the sea to sky, the sounds of streams, the wind, birds, insects, the occasional honking of pika are announcing your place in the family of things. The colors of the Buddha body everywhere around us are beyond coming and going if we are able to shed our husk and see. And Dogen continues on in his text. He says, okay, you think you understand? Think you get it? Let's check. Let's check your awareness. He checks our awareness, our presence, and he asks this. Are the sounds and colors intimate when they are apparent, or are they intimate when they are obscured? Are they one whole expression or half an expression? So, stepping outside, senses wide open to the world, how do you answer Dogen? Are you aware, intimate when fully engaged in daily activity, or when you're still? Are you fully intimate or partly intimate? When you sit zazen, where does your true body start and where does it end? You don't have to answer at the moment, but these are true questions. And Dogen goes on. Bodhisattvas who study the way, open your minds to the mountains flowing and to water not flowing. Dongpo had this awakening soon after he heard Chongzhan talk about insentient beings speaking the Dharma. Although Dongpo did not leap when he heard Chongzhan's words, towering billows flew into the sky upon his hearing the sounds of the valley. Was it the valley sounds or the tide of awakening that jolted Dongpo? Maybe you've heard before, you know, Dharma's everywhere, everything chants the Dharma, yada, yada, yada. But it's only when we listen and open that we really hear. And Dogen goes on to say, I suspect that Chongzhan's voices of the insentient being speaking the Dharma are resounding even now, still blended with the sounds of the night's stream. Who can fathom this water? Is it a bucket full or does it fill whole oceans? In the end, let me ask you. Uh-oh. Here comes Dogen again, another question for us. Was it Dongpo who was awakened or the mountains and waters that were awakened? Now, what an interesting question Dogen asks here. Was it Dongpo who was awakened, or the mountains and waters that were awakened? You know, how often in our kind of materialistic and scientific worldview we separate, you know, this is sentient, this is the insentient. This is alive, that's not. This thinks, that doesn't. And we kind of see and evaluate each thing that way, consciously or perhaps sometimes unconsciously. The rocks, trees, plants, flowing streams, clouds are somehow a little more distant than, say, something like warm-blooded mice, rabbits, cats, dogs, bears. They seem much closer to us in a way. But is this really true? Surely the environmental crisis we're in now teaches us that the boundaries that we have so long assumed as part of the world, the boundaries we have so long assumed as being true, are just our conceptions. In fact, really, just our misconceptions. Dogen wrote in the Mountains and Waters Sutra that Kate talked about yesterday, he wrote, the blue mountains are neither sentient nor insentient. The self is neither sentient nor insentient. In intimacy, the division between sentient and insentient just doesn't make sense. The Dharma truth of no boundaries, no separation comes forward when we open to the world. And as Dogen tells us, there is no separation between the blue mountains and you, between the rocks and you. Dogen describes this intimacy in another little text, again a very kind of famous one called the Genjo Koan. He describes this intimacy like this. He says, to carry the self forward and illuminate things is delusion. Right? Oh, I see that. That's red and you know, this is my mat, that's yours, right? Kind of. That the myriad things come forth and illuminate is awakening. To carry the self forward and illuminate the myriad things is delusion. That myriad things come forth and illuminate the self is awakening. So if you haven't guessed it by now, this text, The Sound of Streams and Form of the Mountain, is really about the teaching of the insentient. Here in this wild place, we have the opportunity to open to the teachings of the insentient. opening to the teachings really means simply meeting, fully meeting. You have the opportunity to meet the insentient, and for the insentient to meet you. I have come to believe that meeting can only happen from both sides. Meeting can only happen from both sides. And that our abiding discontent that I talked about earlier is the absence of such meeting. Suffering is what happens when we drop into our story of isolation, when we forget that we are part of this world, that belonging is always here. Entranced by the story of ourself, I think we become blind, as Mary Oliver puts it. We become blind to our place in the family of things. The earth is constantly ready to meet us without regard to whatever we give back. Every step we take, the earth is there to support us. A little bit later in this, in the same text, Dogen gives an example of another Zen teacher, Jiquan. So he's one of the Zen ancestors who had been practicing for a long time, about 30 years, according to Dogen. And one day he walks into the mountains. And while resting there, in the distance, he sees peach blossoms in full bloom at the distant village. And at that moment, he was able to see the insentient teaching. And he wrote a poem. The Chinese were great poetry writers. Lots of poems. So he wrote this. For 30 years, seeking the sword master. Many times, leaves fell, new ones sprouted. One glimpse of peach blossoms. Now, no more doubts. Just this. Jiquan opened to the mountain colors, as Dogen phrases it, the unconditioned body of the Dharma. So here we are in the wild. How do we see the mountain colors? How do you hear the valley streams? So here's a koan, one of those Zen questions, maybe, to help us for the rest of the retreat here. And it goes like this. Once a monk asked Changsha, how do you turn mountains and rivers and the great earth into the self? Changsha replied, how do you turn the self into mountains, rivers, and the great earth? How do you turn the self into mountains, rivers, and the great earth? Like any strong Zen teacher, Changsha doesn't give an answer. At least not one that we can like, oh, right, I'll write that down in my journal. I'll keep that. Instead, he turns the question right back. How do you meet the mountains, rivers, and great earth? How do they meet you? In the meeting, who is there to witness? Our way of practice is quite simple, yet really difficult. Simple. The only thing we need do is give our full presence to the world. We allow the myriad things to come forward. How do we allow that? By giving our full presence to the world. Hey, that's enough for now. Thank you for listening. We have some work to do after this talk. So let's stop here and then I'll make an announcement.